Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh. Dave, it's Titans week, but man, it's a short week, and the Steelers get to go into this one 2-2 after a big 16-14 victory over the Eagles at Heinz Field yesterday. I guess my take from the game is certainly lots of room for improvement, but I actually think that might be the best game the Steelers played. Certainly from a defensive standpoint it was, but there is so much to talk about and get to. What kind of jumped out at you first and foremost?
Sloppy game. It's good to be 2-2. Defense, I thought, bend didn't necessarily break. Good to see the turnovers. The offense just kept shooting themselves in the foot, man. This game could have been 31-14 just as easily, I thought. And it was good to see Ben Roethlisberger driving down the field for the game-winning drive. And I guess the big picture is, 3 years from now, we're not going to look back, and it'll be hard to recollect this game and say, do you remember that game in 2012 against the Eagles? It was that type of game. But a win, I went and checked NFL.com, David, and there's no stat column for style points in there. So, we'll take the win, 2-2. A short week, as you said, a lot for us to do, me and you combined, this week here.
Yes, absolutely. And let's first get the injury report out of the way. And we don't know a lot. Mike Tomlin's going to have his press conference today. Dave will have that up on Steelers Depot after, later this afternoon, of course. But the presumption is with Troy going out in the first quarter with a calf injury, Lamar Woodley going out with a right hamstring strain in the second quarter, that's the opposite hamstring of the one that he injured last year, that these two guys aren't going to be available Thursday. I think that's probably not even a starting point. They won't even consider that. If you can't go the second half of a game Sunday, you're not going to do any preparation this week, and you're not going to be able to go Thursday.
I couldn't have said it any better. I think Tomlin all but ruled him out basically last night. Today, he's not going to share much information, I don't think. I don't think he's going to know much today, really, this quick of turnaround here in his press conference. He might even tell us today that they are ruled out, but you have to be worried about Troy. Boy, he really – did he hop the entire way across the field on one leg there? And, when he planted on that play, it was so far away from the ball. It was the fumble that Timmons had caused on the play. It just looked like one bad step and something gave way. I wasn't able to track down the Woodley strain, where he was shot in the leg. Of course, I haven't looked real hard for that just yet through the tape. But, both these guys, there's no way they go on Thursday. So we can expect both those guys more than likely to be down. That means maybe Brandon Johnson gets the helmet back this week in place of Woodley. And you would have to think Robert Golden gets the helmet this week as the fourth safety.
Yeah, Dave, what you're commenting on Troy's injury, it was interesting because it actually looked like he pushed LeSean McCoy at the edge of the sideline there. And I'm sure, when you push somebody, you're obviously bracing in your lower legs. And it looked like, as you said, something really, you hate to say snapped because that's not the right word to use. But having pulled muscles and done that kind of stuff, again, the bad thing here is this is I'm going to play doctor here, right? But this is not something where, he tweaked it and he could just walk off the field. And if you do something like that, it's 3 to 4 weeks. He's not going to be back anytime soon. So, again, we're now talking about Troy at maybe the halfway point of the season, and that could be best-case scenario. Just watching him hobble like that, I actually didn't even see it being at the game. I didn't see it. I was watching the ball. As you said, it was a different part. I didn't even see him hop off the field. So, I was getting the radio sound as well. and that's when I heard it. But, yeah, there's nothing good about that injury. And, unfortunately, I think Steeler fans should be ready for, you know, be prepared to not see Troy here for an extended time.
Yeah, and, you know, I could get sued for Twitter malpractice as far as my doctor assessments go on a few players here. But I'm with you. I mean, he missed two games after, you know, after the Denver game, and you wouldn't have known that he had, of course, there was no visible signs on the field of him hurting the calf there. There were visible signs in this game, the way he got off the field there. So, let's see, this is week six coming up. Man, yeah, you got to cross your fingers that he makes it back for at least the Baltimore game now, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's
and Woodley too, for that matter, because them, you know, we saw the hamstring strain last year with Woodley. That's not something you want a guy, you know, speed rusher, you know, a rusher like him, rushing back from. So the good news is Jason Worlds looks a lot more comfortable at on the left side than he does the right side.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's interesting. And you just wonder. How much of that is him working his way just back into playing, you know, having missed the whole preseason, it's just getting more playing time and getting more comfortable, or if it is really that different for him playing on one side or the other, because there's no question he was much better in the game on Sunday against the Eagles. Just on the Woodley thing, the only saving grace maybe in the Woodley situation is I think he was actually arguing with Keith Butler about going back into the game. And maybe he just had enough of a mild strain where it could be a 7 to 10 day injury and not a 4 week injury, and they don't want to risk it with him. Again, you and I are both totally speculating, but the way he came off and the kind of the thought that he was questionable to return, and the way Troy came off hopping, as you said, for, you know, at least the half of the field that I saw the film clip of, you know, it seems more severe. And for him, it's a recurring injury, which is an issue. So, Dave, let's get into kind of how the game started. And the Eagles and Michael Vick, we were both concerned about what he brings to the table. And very early, the Steelers got some breaks with him coughing the ball up. But the Steelers' run defense didn't look particularly good, as LeSean McCoy early on was having his way going around the left side of that Eagles offensive line.
You know, and I guess we should, I should tip my cap to James Harrison. Played every damn snap in that game, man. Unreal. I mean, I know we shouldn't be surprised too terribly much because we are talking about James Harrison here. But let's admit here. I mean, the word going into this game was he was going to rotate snaps with Chris Carter there. On that side, and you know, Carter never saw the field. I was worried about James early on because on one early run by McCoy, Harrison got trapped inside, and Keenan Lewis, I think on one of those runs, just got pummeled by the fullback over there.
Yep, did Keenan got in there first, and he took he basically took the blocker out of the play, but there was nobody there to make the play behind him.
Yeah, but after that, I thought actually, you know, hey, look who you're dealing with here, Shady McCoy. I mean, a great runner on the edge there. He's going to get a few good runs outside occasionally on that. I thought as the game wore on, though, I thought that both the outside linebackers did an excellent job, Harrison and Woodley, and then eventually Jason Worlds, of setting that edge and forcing him wide. A couple of those on those little bit of those zone kind of stretch type plays there. The entire defensive line, I thought, played well. I know there's some people bitching about Casey Hampton this morning and the defensive line, but let me tell you, two trips through the film already, I thought the defensive line and the linebackers played very, very well in this game, particularly Lawrence Timmons, who, man, I don't know if it was them pink shoes or what, but, you know, we talked about how he looked in some of these early games like he was running with concrete shoes on. It looked like he had the shoes of who's the famous Greek god? Is that Mercury or?
Yeah, Mercury or Hermes, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, boy, those shoes, I don't know. But he, let me tell you, Timmons had the game of, I can't remember the last time Timmons had a game where he looked that explosive and that quick. Now, he did miss, you know, the patented flying Timmons fly-by tackle where he misses. He had a few of those, and he probably should have had four sacks in the game as well, too. But I can't help but going back to an early pressure on Dick, and where he should have had probably his first sack there. He just destroyed LeSean McCoy on the blitz pickup there. I mean, and then after that, McCoy was pretty much just a traffic cone to him the rest of the game when Timmons came. But overall, I thought the linebackers did a great job in this game. I thought the defensive line played well in this game. And I think people are forgetting that it's not sacks all the time as much as it is pressure. And the Steelers certainly had pressure and were getting hits on Michael Vick in this game.
Yeah, no question the pressure was a big deal. And this was by far and away the best defensive game they've played. As you said, you got good play from the outside linebackers. Dave, one of the things, I know you already have the snap counts up on SteelersDepot.com. And I was watching very closely early on in this game, and there were times when McClendon, Al Woods, and Cam Hayward were in there, I think, on the at latest the second drive, and getting 3 to 4 snaps right there. I didn't get a full count, but I think they probably got 4 or 5 snaps in the first half. But then, again, none of these guys hit double-digit snaps at all for the game. And, you know, I guess at some point it's a tad surprising that they're willing to use them early there and then not late.
Yeah, Dave, I think the reasoning early on on this, and we'll see this when my Charters get this back play-by-play here, when exactly their playing time was. I don't remember them seeing a lot of snaps in the second half. I think the reasoning here was to give them some early snaps to perhaps kind of save the front early on. And you got to remember, I think the Eagles had a pretty good long drive to open things up there, and that might have had something to do with it. The good thing is while all three of those guys, Cam Hayward, Steve McClendon, and Al Woods, were all in the game, I didn't notice a drop-off in there. In fact, I think I saw McClendon really get, you know, have good pressure on Vic on one of those in there. I remember Al Woods chasing down a play that towards the opposite side of the field on one of those as well, too. So, you know, I guess, you know, hey, the defense only gave up 14 points in this game. Of course, it could have been more if not for the fumble, the turnovers by Vic in this game, which, of course, you know, the defense did cause two of those there. It is a little bit, you know, I guess, perplexing, especially a guy with Cam Hayward, like Cameron Hayward, who is a first-round pick, who really should be seeing his snaps probably in the 15 to 20 range, at least at this point of his career in his second season now. But we'll definitely keep an eye on this and see how it shakes out. But it wasn't detrimental to the defense, I don't think, in this game.
Yeah, no, I don't. In fact, I think that was maybe what surprised me is, you know, I thought they were doing a reasonable job in there. And I just was curious that seemingly in the second half, you know, they didn't get as much playing time. But, you know, we've touched on Timmons, we touched on Worlds, we touched on the D-line. The other big return was Rashard Mendenhall, obviously. And there are a couple things, Dave, and I think you were the first person I heard point this out, and you were dead on point. We talked about it a lot during the later part of the week, is you felt like the Steelers could run the ball at the middle of this Eagles defense, and they did so very effectively. And Rashard Mendenhall looked very good in his first game back. Now, I don't want to just say it was all Rashard, because the offensive line was opening holes this week that we hadn't seen the first three games. But I think you hit it, and I think you already have a post up about how many yards they got between the tackles.
Yeah, and it was a combination of both. Listen, and here's one observation I want to make sure I get out there as well, too. Did you notice the Steelers ran a lot of the two tight end with the tight ends on the wings?
Yes.
In this game, a very nice adjustment by Todd Haley. That helped slow down the pass rush quite a few times. And I had posted about this. We talked about it on the podcast as well, too. And I think I talked about it on your show pregame yesterday, how, you know, making sure that they chip on these guys, on these defensive ends specifically heading into this game. And that was a great game plan by Todd Haley by using both Paulson and Heath Miller in that fashion, which, and we'll get into the offensive snap counts here in a minute, because Paulson Leonard Pope didn't sniff the field and Paulson got all of his snaps this week. But I think it was a combination of the running game, of Rashard being back, hitting those holes, and the Eagles, like I said, heading into this thing, the way they've shown up, the Eagles on tape, is they've been having problems getting enough helmets in gaps because of the type of defense that they play.
Right, right.
And that's exactly what we saw in this game. And when you're able to get off the line of scrimmage, which the Steelers were able to do with Pouncey, with Gilbert a few times, with Cologne a few times, get out in space and away from, and let's face it, those Eagles front, it's a smallish front. So that helps in the matter as well, too. And when you have your defensive ends wide like that, really, people, you're going to have some lanes there, and you just got to make one or two blocks at the second level to really free up some runs. And up the middle is exactly where I thought they were going to run here, and they did. And according to the play-by-play report, both Redmond and Mendenhall ran right up the middle for 48 yards in this game on 11 carries. 24 runs I have tabulated in total went were listed as between guard to guard. Basically between the tackles, and that totaled up 82 of the rushing yards. Not only that, now Mendenhall did, of course, have some nice runs on the outside as well, and he did have a 24-yard run up the middle that was called back because of a bonehead illegal formation penalty on
bonehead is exactly the right
on Mike Walsh. You just
that's unacceptable.
Yeah, you just can't do that. But here's a good thing to hang your hat on the entire situation here. Only three runs, I believe, by the running backs went for 0 yardage, and none of the runs by either Mendenhall, Redmond, or Rainey went for negative yardage. That cannot be underscored enough there. If you're going to run, at least get positive yardage. Well, I talk about successful plays as well, too. You know, 40 to 45% on first down of what the needed yardage, 60%. The needed yardage on second down, and of course 100% on third and fourth down. They ran very successful in this game. The yards per carry, of course, reflect this. Mendenhall was breaking some tackles, as was Redmond as well, too. But I think it was a combination of both. And they entered the game, of course, under 3 yards per carry total as the team. And I believe they exited the game with a 3.2 yards per carry on the season now, which, you know, that's not great. But looking at what it's been so far, it almost feels like a 5.2 yards per carry.
Absolutely. And Mendenhall with 81 on 14 carries was 5.8 himself. And the team was 136 yards. They averaged 4.4 on the game. And, you know, if a play doesn't count, it doesn't count. But the 24-yard game by Mendenhall, which you cite, that had nothing to do with the holding call that opened a hole or anything. It was just Mike Wallace bonehead lining up play. So that obviously would have taken them to about 5 yards a carry on the game. They would have had 160 yards rushing, if you want to just look at it that way. So very effective in the run game, as you said, Dave. Dave, you know,
let me ask you this, too. I was amazed when you look at the snap count this morning. Only 22 snaps for Mendenhall in this game. Didn't it feel like he had 32?
Yeah, it did. And I'll tell you what surprised me a lot is when they came out in the second half and he wasn't in the game. And he had clearly been the effective guy in the first half. And I was shocked. I was literally had the binoculars on the sideline looking for him because I didn't understand why he wasn't in there, because clearly they were using him and he was effective. And I, you know, all of a sudden you've already got Paul Amalo hurt and you already got Woodley hurt. So I'm expecting the worst, but he's over there. He's jogging in place and touching his heels and doing all the things that, you know, getting ready to be back in the game. And sure enough, shortly thereafter, he was back in the game. Dave, the Steelers get the break with the fumble recovery in the end zone. You know, they get up, they've got a lead, but you know my bugaboo, and I didn't send many tweets out because my phone was dying at the game, but good gracious, they screwed it up at the end of the first half again, and the Steelers, you know, they have an opportunity to punch it in down there. They have a nice drive going at the end of the half, and unfortunately, they get in a situation where you know what I'm going to talk about, how they do this clock management, and Ben gets the whole team lined up to run a play here, and he spikes the ball with 24 seconds left. Now they ran a play on 3rd and 4 from the Eagles 27 with 49 seconds left. 49 seconds left. And Antonio Brown gains 18 yards. It's a really nice play. But that play takes about 10 seconds. So the Steelers had a timeout left. So you can get up there, and if it takes 10 seconds, that gets you to, let's just say, 35 seconds. Let's say it took 14 seconds. Let's assume, but 10 is probably much more like it when he's tackled. You call time out there. You have 40 seconds from the 9-yard line. That's an eternity. You can run a play if you want to run a play. I mean, a running play. But they don't do it. They go up there. Ben gets them all lined up, and then he clocks the ball. And it turns out it costs him, you know, you can't say for sure it costs him 4 points, but it's certainly cost them an opportunity to get 4 more points. And in a game like this, we know how valuable 4 points would have been.
And I don't have the bee up my butt like you do in this particular situation here. You know, look at the play before the spike, though. That was the Antonio Brown catch on 3rd and 4. Brown gets his shoe ripped off, and Kurt Coleman decides to launch it. As well, too, and launched it towards the sideline. So now you have Antonio Brown out there with one shoe on in that situation. So you're lining up, and they spike the ball, you know, which you know, I'm fine with, because the play actually did take some time. I mean, when you snap the ball at 49 seconds, by the time Brown jukes, he gets tackled, his shoe's ripped off, his shoe is tossed out of the game there.
Well, wouldn't that immediately signal to you that you should be calling timeout right there?
Man, I think they just wanted to save the timeout just in case there, but because let's look at the play after the stoppage, after the clock stoppage. Jericho Country should have scored.
Oh yeah, but yeah, right, of course. Yeah, but that's, you know, that's results based analysis and not looking. I mean, they scored in Denver when Ben screwed up the clock too. You can certainly score. It's not prohibiting you from scoring. But you know, they had to kick the field goal there instead of having another chance to go from the two to run whatever play they wanted to run.
Yeah,
it's bad clock management. There's no two ways about it. I don't even think this.
I mean, what happens if you call the timeout at say what
36
seconds?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you get just one more play, basically. I guess
One more play is all you need because you got three downs. I mean, look, if you get tackled on the 3-yard line and you're worried about it, you can run up and clock it. But how long does it take to go from the 9 to the 3? I mean, how long is a play going to – any play, even if you're stuck in bounds with 36 seconds left, how long is any play going to take?
David, they got 2 more plays off, and they were 2 great shots at a touchdown.
Right,
there.
But they should have had 3. Is my point. They should have had 3 plays.
Looking at results based there.
I'm not looking at results based. I'm saying if you call the timeout with 36 seconds left, you're on the 9-yard line. You don't think you can run 3 plays there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had to say. You have to save the timeout in case the guy gets tackled short, you know, or else you're going to.
No, you throw it in the end zone on 2nd and 3rd down from the 9. You got, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. You obviously have a chance to run 3 plays. And if you're on the first play, you get stopped on the 2 and you want to spike it. Okay, whatever. But you can still throw it in the end zone from the 2 instead of clocking it. It just doesn't make any sense. They gave away a down and they gave away 3 points. Yeah, Kotchery should have scored. No question.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, I see where you're coming from. I just don't have I don't have as big of a bee up my butt as that, because they had 2 plays that they should have scored on after that. And you know, if they convert, I mean, I guess you're still talking about it afterwards. But, yeah, I mean, it was a big series in the game because, really, they should have come out of that a 14-0 lead, and they probably wouldn't have been in a situation that they would have been later in the game had they went ahead and punched that in as well, too. But, yeah, I see where you're coming from.
The Eagles come out, the Steelers come out in the 2nd quarter, and it's a disaster right out of the chute.
Let's not skip over to Willie Colon holding calls.
In. Oh yeah, no, I was just we could talk about that forever. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of guys, and I'd like your opinion on this. A lot of guys who actually think Colon, and it's hard to say in spite of, or if you cast aside, because when you get called for holding, I think 4 times, you can't really cast it aside, but. We do think the line in general had a much better game. Now, some of that's the Eagles defense, but a better game.
Oh, yeah, the offensive line had a much better game. I mean, yeah. And, hey, let's look. The pass protection has not been bad at all this season, in my opinion. Heck, I mean, there were opportunities. Ben was under pressure at times in this game, but what game is he not under pressure? And I thought the pass, I think they're going to grade out good again in pass protection here. And I think the run blocking was better than average for the reasons that I explained earlier there. So the offensive bugaboos outside of the Cologne holding calls was not on the offensive line. I mean, there you had Wallace with drops. You had Brown with some drops in there as well, too. And you know, yeah, the offensive line I thought played well as a whole. Hey, you did have Marquise Pouncey try to I don't know if he was trying to hit the crossbar on a couple of those snaps there, but those definitely need to be corrected, those two snaps. And thank God Max Starks was there to jump on one of those, because if not, then they have the ball deep in our territory there.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the penalties. I think there was a series where the Steelers in that – they got penalized four straight times, right? That was in the first half.
You had the Wallace legal formation, either the next play or the play after Antonio Brown with a false start.
Yeah, and then running out of bounds on the punt.
Then DeMarcus Van Dyke running out of bounds on the punt, and even before that, there might have been a holding.
Oh, a holding call, right? I got it right here. A holding call that was declined on Willie Colon.
Right, and without a doubt, that was – you're starting to wonder, man, guys, get your focus here. These penalties, and I had a post about this after the Raiders game, man, it's just killing them. That's the eighth penalty now on Willie Colon in four games. Six holding calls, two false starts. This has got to stop. You talked about the Wallace. That's just bonehead. You're taught that you can't cover up that tight end. He really looked distracted in this game. Wallace did. I'm not sure what, you know, targeted eight times, two receptions in this game, a couple of drops. Antonio Brown, you know, false start, just that type of stuff is inexcusable. I can handle a holding call every now and again, you know, but some of those penalties were just bonehead. The running out of bounds by Van Dyke, you know, just little stuff like that, you know, are things that need to be tightened up seriously moving forward.
Yeah, and on that drive there at the end of the first half, that was a great throw by Ben to Antonio Brown. I had a really good view of that play. You could see Brown break open. It wasn't a simple catch, but it's a ball he's got to catch, and, you know, juggled it out of the back of the end zone. That was a tough one.
Oh, that was a great throw. Great throw. He's got to have that there as well.
And we don't see Antonio Brown drop balls, but he did drop two. That one over the middle also, I think, sometime in that second quarter where he jumped around after he – it wasn't, again, not a simple catch, but he's got to catch it. And then one in the end zone he has to catch.
Yeah, I believe I have him down for two drops. I think I have Wallace down for three drops in this game. And Ben didn't get – they weren't helping Ben out. Now, let's face it, in the first half, too, there were some penalties that weren't called maybe on the receivers. I think two on Emmanuel Sanders, perhaps. I think one he had the guy over the back, and then one, I think the linebacker had a hold of him crossing on a crossing pattern there. The calls certainly did not go the way of the Steelers in the first half. Ike Taylor on that early
– a terrible call.
Oh, man, let the guy's hand fight like that. I mean, that's the joy of watching two competitors go after each other there.
Matt Macklin initiated that contact as well.
Yeah, and I think all the official on that side saw was the final reach in over to the far hand by Taylor. When you slow that thing down and go back and look at it, I think that's what ultimately got the call. But outside of that, I thought some good bracket coverage by both Taylor and Clark in this game. Keenan allowed, you know, some stuff underneath. But we've talked about this several times, and it's amazing how many people continue to get upset about this. The Steelers are going to give up stuff underneath. I mean, it's just going to happen. If you know, on plays that they don't get pressure on the quarterback, you might as well get used to it. To say to cut a guy after every time he gives up a reception is just flat out foolish. I mean, the LeBeau defense, do not give up the big play. Wrap up the tackler. Do not allow yards after the catch. And eventually, you know, a quarterback's going to make a mistake, or they're going to have a penalty, or they're going to, you know, get off on third downs there. So I thought an overall good play by the secondary. Ryan Mundy kind of, man, this guy is struggling right now when he came into the game for Troy Polamalu there. But overall, I thought it was a good game by the secondary. I think Ryan Clark and Ryan Mundy both, they might save postage at the NFL office and put both of those fines in one FedEx envelope.
So let me ask you a couple things, Dave. One is you talked about the Sanders pass over the middle where he might have gotten interfered with. Really dangerous throw by Ben on that one. That was one where I questioned, haven't seen that a couple different times. He had to throw over a linebacker into another linebacker. I mean, it probably should have been interference, but I thought he was trying to squeeze one in there that would get made me a little nervous. The second one is I haven't seen a good look at this Mundy hit. The three or four times I saw it on the scoreboard, I didn't see the helmet-to-helmet, but I guess from listening to other people, clearly there was some helmet-to-helmet contact.
Yeah, it was close, and boy, it's so hard for those guys to pull up, you know? Such limited space, and I commented on Twitter, you know what, just start taking their damn knees out, and that's a bad way to look at it, I know, but it's going to be close on Monday, I think. I mean, they've been consistent with this kind of helmet. You know, you make contact with the helmet type thing, and I think he did get up high into the face mask there. The one on Clark, Brent Celek was a kind of a defensive guy there. Mike Tomlin, use your head, don't hit the head.
Did Clark get him in the head? Because again, from I'm sitting around people watching the same thing I saw. It looked like he hit him, you know, right across the forearms in the middle of his chest. But
nah, he got him up high there.
He got him high.
Yeah, I think that's
his helmet.
I think they're both good calls, unfortunately, and they weren't as egregious as we've seen this year by far, but I think it's going to be enough. Maybe they don't get the full fines on this. Maybe they get the 7,500 variety or whatever the lower range is. But I think they both can expect the FedEx envelope.
Interesting. Okay, Dave. In the second half, a lot's been made about this Eagle drive that put them ahead. You know, they score the first touchdown drive. The Steelers go along, but we get into this second drive. And I, you know, one of the things that we've talked a little bit about over the course of the years that we've been doing this, and I've talked a lot about on my show, is how often teams should go for it on fourth and one. And we saw in the Raider game, the Steelers went for it. It didn't end up impacting the game, extended the drive they were on. It did impact the game early in the first quarter on the first drive when they went and hit Mike Wallace for a first down and ended up getting 7 points rather than settling for three. We saw the Raiders on a fourth and two where Kiesel jumped offside. They end up getting a touchdown. We see in this Eagles game, they do it. And just to cite college games, West Virginia, 5 for 5 on fourth down. Penn State repeatedly went for it on fourth down against Northwestern and scored touchdowns, and it was a big impact on that game. I think we're starting to see the evolution of people understanding that going for it on fourth down more often than not can be beneficial. Now, you don't want to do what the Eagles did and go for it on fourth down in the second quarter from your own 30-yard line, but that's a situation where the Steelers had them all bottled up. If Keenan Lewis gets leverage there and gets down at his feet, they lose the ball, and the Steelers ice the game right there, but they didn't, and the Eagles go down and score. Interesting stuff. I thought it was interesting strategy. Did you think it was a boneheaded move by Andy Reid at the time he did it?
No, I think Football Outsiders has done extensive study on this in the fourth down, type situations like this where you're going to see more of this. I think even in the Broncos Patriots game, didn't McGahee drop an easy fourth down pass there in that game as well too? Late that could have really completed or got him closer to the comeback there in that one. I think you are going to – I think college and pro, I think all across the board there, I think you're starting to see that especially with as tough as it is on defenses now to defend what they can and can't do. I'm guessing you're going to see more of this moving forward. And I didn't have a problem with Andy Reid's calls in that game, as well as I didn't have a problem with and we talked about Mike Tomlin's call in the Raiders game as well too. I think I think the odds are starting to are really in your favor in certain situations on fourth downs.
Yeah, and I also just think you know, conventional wisdom is not quite conventional wisdom anymore. And a lot of the reasons people don't want to make those decisions is they don't want to be criticized by the fans, the media, whomever, after the fact, because they did something that was quote-unquote unconventional, even though it made sense. And I think in all these situations it made sense, and we're seeing conversions of fourth downs are very high. And, in fact, I don't know what the Steelers' numbers on the season are, but I think they're 3-for-3 or 4-for-4. And now against them, these are the first two that somebody's actually had to actually run the play against them, because the Raiders obviously didn't with the offside call, but they're 100% as well. So, again, this is just making this point now so that when we see it later in the year and it's unsuccessful, people realize that, you know, there are situations where they can do it. The Steelers did have one.
Did you know? Here's a call. Let me throw this out while I'm looking at it to you. 57.94% across the NFL fourth down percentage.
There you go. That's a pretty good percentage. It's better than third down, I'll tell you that for sure.
Third down across the board. What did I say? Fourth down, 57.94. 38.33 third down. Across the board in the NFL.
Right, and you're never going to have unless it's desperation, you're not going to have a fourth and 12 where you're going for it on fourth down. They're always going to be short yardage, and third down you'll have a lot of those. So it's not really apples to apples. But having said that, interesting stuff. And the Steelers were going to go for it on a fourth down again. They had a penalty call, didn't they, early in that game when they lined up to go, and did they have an illegal motion call?
I'm trying to recall that play.
As the Steelers were driving to the open end zone, Ben lined up. It was about a fourth and five from the 34 or so. I'm trying to find it as well here in my play-by-play.
Oh, they went for it on fourth and 10 early in the second quarter, and that's when the snap, another bad snap by Pouncey. He ended up throwing it deep to the end zone.
Right. That's what it was. That's what it was.
And that was a fourth and 10 from the Eagles 34.
Right. And I didn't have a problem with that play call either. Now, I don't
think that play was designed to go in deep to the end zone. Maybe.
Oh, absolutely not, Ben. I'm sure at that point was saying this is just like the play in the Raiders game where it's essentially a punt. If the guy intercepts it, it's no big deal. But you know, unfortunately he didn't, but yeah,
exactly.
You get a bad snap I'm just trying to remember, exactly where that play happened. And,
right early in the second quarter, it was the third, I think it was the third snap from, in the second quarter.
Right. The fumble aboard. Right. So it was a fourth and 10 and they did go for it. And that's one where you say, okay, Sushi from 51 yards is, you know, at that point in time, I think he's 6-for-6 or 7-for-7 or whatever he is on the year. I didn't have a problem with him going for it. I like them being aggressive there. Did you think at all about the 51 yard field goal?
Absolutely not. You want to keep, Sushi as positive as possible, and you don't want to set him up for a miss. And I think that's kind of what you're doing there at that situation. And I have no problem with that. We'll never know probably what the original play call was in that situation. But, the defense was playing good. Or good enough at that time, so why not go for it there? And I think it was a smart decision by Ben after the bad snap to pick it up and say, hey, I'm just going to chuck this towards double coverage in the end zone to Mike Wallace. If it's intercepted, it's just as good as a punt in this situation. The flip side of that is you never know with a guy like Mike Wallace and he might make the play. So no, I had absolutely no problem with going for it in that situation there.
Dave, there's been some criticism of the Steelers' defense for giving up points late. They gave up a lead again, and the offense, you know, much credit to the offense here, and we'll get to them in a second. But the Steelers, you know, they put the Eagles in some difficult down and distance situations on that last drive, but couldn't stop them.
Well, the Monday personal foul on second and 12 on their first scoring drive, that definitely hurt because, you know, not only did you have the 11 yards that Macklin had gained on the play, you had 15 yards enforced on top of it, and then
that's also after the 15 on Ryan Clark.
When was
to open that?
Yeah, that's true. You have two big penalties on that play on that drive there, you're bailing the offense out, at that time. So, if it's and buts were candies and nuts, hard to know what happens moving forward there. One thing in that drive, too, they didn't recover the fumble. Vic was sacked by McLennan and fumbled, and Danny Watkins recovered the recovered a fumble. Boy, how different would the game been if the Steelers jump on that ball there? How do you put this on the defense though? Outside of the bonehead hits by both Clark and Mundy here.
No, I'm not putting anything on the defense. I'm just asking you what you thought about that last drive. I mean, they're 3rd and 10 where they run the deep ball to Jackson. And look, it's fact. It's not. I don't know that it's being overly critical, but it's fact that they again gave up a late lead, and we've now seen it. You know, in three games.
Yeah. Now that last drive, that was a little bit. You hate to see that. Boy, I mean, what, 16, 17 plays on that. He used all of his complement of people on that drive as well, too. I think Macklin had a catch. I think McCoy had a catch in that drive. DeSean Jackson.
Selleck
Harbor. Selleck was the touchdown in front of Ryan Mundy there, which that was not contested at all in that situation there. It is concerning. I don't think anybody will argue against that they've got to get better late in games of getting off the field. The 3rd and 10 is probably that they converted to DeSean Jackson. That was probably the gut punch there on that one. And we've seen, you know, you go back to the game against the Raiders, they had a 3rd and 9 or something on.
Oh yeah, the drag play to Hagan. That Lawrence Timmons, he missed the coverage on that.
Right. Well, actually, I mean, he had great coverage on the play. Damn Palmer put the damn thing through a damn eye of a damn needle on there, where only his guy was going to catch it. But yeah, they got them. You know, 3rd and 4 is easier to swallow getting converted than a 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 10. You know, playing a simple one, and giving up that 3rd and 10 at that point. You know, that's when I think I posted on Twitter, boy, my tummy's starting to hurt because, a few plays after that, they're in the end zone there, and at least there is plenty of time left on the clock at that point.
Right, and the last drive, this is where, Ben gets all the kudos, and Ben's passer rating, I'm sure, is down where it was after coming into the game, and he was great in those two losses. But didn't get it done at the end. And in this game, as you said, his receivers didn't do him any help. He was pretty good, but he was really good on this last drive. And, of course, the Steelers convert their own 3rd and 12 here to Antonio Brown for 20 yards, and that was a huge play. And then they convert a 3rd and 4 to Manny Sanders. Again, on both these plays, Boykin, the guy who was getting razzed a little bit by Antonio Brown coming into the game as being the candy bar guy, is the guy on the coverage. But on the 3rd and 12, I guess the Eagles went zone there, Dave. And Asamoah has defended the coverage call. They say on 3rd and long, that's the coverage they've been using all year. But Ben got it done, and Antonio Brown held that one.
Most definitely, and probably the biggest conversion I think was the one to Sanders. They both were good. The one to Brown, but the pass short right to Sanders there for 7 yards. That was a two way option route there. We saw, that was a route that Hines Ward really ran a lot, in his time here. And it's good to see, Sanders and Ben start getting on the same, page as far as that goes. And normally on that two-way option route, the receiver has the option to go left or right depending on where he's seeing in there. And it normally happens in either like 4, 6, 8, or 14-yard increments there. And it was a great read by Sanders on that route. And Ben was on the same page with him and converted there. But, yeah, once again, we saw Ben. And what were the Steelers weren't necessarily great on 3rd down percentage, I think, heading into that drive. But they completed, what, 1, 2 key 3rd downs on that drive, to end up winning the ballgame.
Were you at all concerned or encouraging them to maybe be a little more aggressive after they got that 1st down and you have they now have the 1st down on the 31-yard line? So it's by no means a gimme. At that point, it's 48 yards. Now, they're running the ball well, and right away, Mendenhall gets the 8. And so now you're kind of 40 and in. So you're in a good situation there. Any thoughts about doing anything to take a shot, maybe a play-action pass, or just comfortable making, seeing if he can kick a 35-yard field goal?
Which Dave are you asking? Are you asking the one that likes to
– That likes to cover? Yeah. That laid 3.5?
Yeah.
That's the Dave who's asking that Dave.
I had a feeling. Yes, damn it, I had a problem with that.
A little play action would be wonderful right there.
I shoot for the damn 7 points here. When you remove that angle from it, you had to be careful with the football here. You had to milk the clock down. Now, I think at that point, the Eagles had burned all their timeouts. So, you have to make sure that you're not going to leave time on the clock, with some incomplete passes as well there, in that situation too. So, the entertainment purposes, Dave had a problem with it, but I think it was the right call. And hey, Mendenhall had been running good. They were running downhill, I thought, at that point too, and owning the line of scrimmage as well too. So I think the play calling was justified in that situation.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I just if Swisham misses that field goal, the conversation is, why do you leave it in the hands of a field goal kicker from 35 yards? Or look, he's paid to make those kicks. He's made those kicks. There'll be a time over the course of whoever is kicking for the Steelers that they will miss a kick like that. And the question will be, why weren't you more aggressive and get it closer or play for 7? I think it's a happy medium. And you're right. It's as you said, you've got to be careful with the football there. They were careful with the football. They got it done. Swisham was dead down the middle, and there's no reason to not count on Sushi at this point. And I feel a little bit exonerated for my defense of him in the offseason, and we'll see what happens.
He's going to miss at some point this year.
And I'm going to guess the fans aren't going to be happy when he does.
You're exactly right. They'll be saying we need another kicker at that point. But, I think the kid has been great so far. And that's really the first really huge, huge pressure kick that he's had this season. And you always like to see him make those. And I think I heard or read something where Tomlin really singled him out after the game as well, too. And he had a little smile, boyish Christmas morning smile on his face. So, kickers are such delicate, individuals and animals as far as mental goes. It's good to see him get that and get the game winner there in a pressure situation there. So, yeah, I couldn't be happy with Swisham. I said at the start of the year that there's no way he makes it all the way through this season on the 53-man roster. But, there's no reason to think that he won't at this point.
Okay, Dave, so the Steelers get the win. It is a short week. Tomlin's press conference coming up here in about an hour and a half. You'll have that up. We're going to come back, and we're going to get things going Wednesday. But anything and we're going to talk more about this game when we've heard from Tomlin. We've had a chance to look at the film some more. But just big picture stuff, I think we've hit on all the key points. Anything you wanted to add on that?
Just that I really think that the defensive line played well. I think people need to get off them in this game. I like the usage, like I said at the start there, of the two tight ends on the wing. I thought that was created. I think the offense really, really shot themselves in the foot and didn't help out the defense in this game. Short week. Thank God it's the Titans. But, there's no gimmies in the NFL whatsoever. And, they have to go on the road here. But the good thing is if they can come out of this game against the Titans, with the W, they'll be 3-2, and then they'll have a little bit of the extra rest there. I think they're going to be really in good shape, injuries aside at that point. So one thing I guess we should note is Ed Bouchette reported yesterday that it appears as if the Steelers have requested for a roster exemption on this short week to accommodate Wesley Saunders returning from his suspension there. So they still can only dress, the 46 on game day here, but it looks like they'll be able to carry 54 yep. players heading into this week there. Now, obviously, Leonard Pope didn't receive snaps in this game, and David Paulson did. That there's your writing on the wall there. That's probably gonna, you know, what your move's gonna be, barring some sort of injuries coming out of this Titans game here. You know, and who's probably gonna be gone at that point. I thought it was a little bit curious, not overly surprising, that Brandon Johnson was down this week. They chose instead to activate Al Woods instead. Jonathan Dwyer, the rest of the inactives I had nailed. And in fact, through four games now, I've only missed one player on one inactive list. And you know, I probably would have thought this through a little bit better. I probably would have thrown Brandon Johnson on that list. But nothing real shocking, no shocking moves yet. It'll be interesting to see with the Polamalu injury if maybe, and we haven't heard what the status of Damon Cromartie Smith is and his foot injury, if maybe they have to elevate him from the practice squad to the 53-man roster, being, you know, a strong safety down. But they've made it, you know, two games without Troy already and didn't have to make a move, so it's doubtful that they'll make a move this week, you know, for him as well.
Yeah, no move on the practice squad, as we saw from Damon Cromartie Smith. I don't, you know, if injuries aren't significant, I don't think you make moves on the practice squad. I don't see them doing this with Troy, but as again, you know, as we both put our tinfoil doctor's hat on, this one has me a lot more concerned than the first one. The bye week was a nice thing looming forward for the Steelers. It turns out, you know, not that necessarily Troy wasn't healthy, just the exertion strains the muscle again. And the way he hopped off the field, it just, you know, to me, it just feels like that. It feels like when you pull it, and if you pull it, you know, 4 to 6 weeks for a guy like Troy, you're going to have to make sure, you're extra sure this time that it's healthy. And that's a big concern.
I had James Harrison ruled out for a couple more games, if not the season. So,
hopefully we're wrong.
Yeah, I've never been more glad to be wrong in that situation. And by the way, Harrison, after that game, graded himself a C-, admitted that he's got some conditioning left to do, which that's not, you know, that's not surprising in the least. I mean, for him to play every damn snap in the game, he gets a game ball in my book for that alone there. So he's working back, and it looks like that knee responded okay, according to him, after the game, you know, as well. So Woodley and Troy now become the main focus injury-wise, and like we said at the start, we don't expect them to play against the Titans.
All right, that's good. So we'll get someone in a beat writer to come up and join us on the show for Wednesday. We may change our schedule depending on how things go on Wednesday and do a short show on Thursday and a short show on Friday, but we'll try to work that out around both our calendars. Dave, anything to add here as the Steelers go 2-2 with a short week coming up, the Mike Tomlin press conference here in about an hour?
Please follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot, Facebook page too, facebook.com/Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd and his show on ESPN. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. He's got a Facebook page up as well too. I'm now integrated David's podcast feed from his ESPN shows into my Twitter feed. So if you have problems finding him, just look at my Twitter feed and you'll be able to go straight to every show, every portion of his show that's up there as well too. Follow the Terrible Podcast at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We're still open for donations via PayPal. Luckily, I've been okay with the man so far this year, you know, but David might not have, and we could always use a cup of coffee, or David might like a cocktail or two.
Yeah, and Dave, I appreciate you integrating my Twitter feed. You've been a great supporter of mine as I've tried to get this career jump started, and in addition, is great publicity and support. So thanks again for that. Dave will be on the show, as always, on Wednesday about 3:15. We'll talk some about the Eagles, and we'll have maybe an extra long session on Wednesday as we preview the Titans. And for you, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.